Welcome. Thank you for watching this teaching video from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Please check out our other videos and don't forget to like and subscribe. Our mission is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more every day. We believe this will not only help our own spiritual growth, but also help us better influence the community and the world for Christ. For more information about Oak Tree, please visit us at oaktreechurch.com. There you'll find past message series, online giving options, and more information about our discipleship process that we call The Path. Now, enjoy this message. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or the website contact form. Thank you.
So, as you just said, we're going to be continuing in the book of Hebrews this week. And I just want to remind you, because never reminded enough, the book of Hebrews is about one theme and one theme, and that is Jesus is better. So, I also want to point out, because it's going to be hit on very heavily this week, that the book of Hebrews was written to Jews who became Christians, started facing some difficulties and persecutions for their Christian beliefs, and decided, you know what, we're going to go back into our old Jewish ways. Why is that important? Because there's going to be a lot of context today that I have to explain because it would have been innately understood by the audience, and I want to make sure we get that. And also, we all need to remember that there are some things in here that, although have some really good teaching things and really good explanation, don't directly apply to us. And so we need to remember that. So for the last couple of weeks and the last couple of chapters, the author has been building up an idea. And that idea is Jesus is a better high priest. He set up in chapter 7 that Jesus is a better high priest because he was of the order of Melchizedek. Why is that important? Well, he was not a priest of Levi. He was not chosen as a priest simply because he was born in the right family. He was not chosen as a priest simply to follow the law, but to live righteously. And last week we saw that he expanded this idea even further. Jesus had a greater authority than any other high priest, including Melchizedek, because of who he was and where he was. We saw last week that Jesus was ministering in the true heavenly tabernacle. This is important, and he really expands on that today. And again, what did we see last week? What about that tabernacle? Well, the tabernacle on earth was just a poor imitation, a poor copy of the real one in heaven. And, my fun fact, the temples don't even get an honorable mention. Also this week, he's going to expand on what he started last week, that Jesus has a better covenant. And the new covenant, just like the old covenant, was for the Jews specifically. And again, this is really important, is that while there are some really cool things we learn about God and about his promises through these covenants, we have to be very careful that we don't take things that are applied to the Jewish people and say, we can apply that directly to us. And as such, I will expand on the covenant a little bit today, but that is not going to be our focus. So what are we going to see today? With all that background out of the way, again, we're going to be continuing on in Hebrews chapter 9. If you would love to follow along, I encourage you to open your Bibles and we can just go through this together. And again, it's right in the middle of the section from 7 to the first part of 10 about Jesus being a better high priest. And today, he's trying to really expand on that. What are the points he's trying to make today? Well, there's really three points the author makes in chapter 9. Jesus is a better high priest because he has a better covenant. Today, he goes into a really detailed explanation of the tabernacle, both the old and the new, and how much better the one in heaven was and is. And as Pastor pointed out when we were singing today, Jesus' sacrifice, all because of his blood. What made his sacrifice so much better? So with that out of the way, let's just open right up and get into Hebrews chapter 9. And starting right in verse 1, the very first word is the word now. And as we learned earlier this year, words have meanings and words are important. So why is the word now important? Well, like I keep pointing out, this section is not its own. This chapter is not meant to stand on its own. This is supposed to continue an idea that has been building and expanding upon since the beginning of chapter 7. And the now specifically points back to the last part of chapter 8. In the last part of chapter 8, we saw how the author said there's going to be a new covenant. And with the appearance of Jesus and this new covenant, the old covenant, the covenant that they're, the Jews, are running back into, was growing old and obsolete. So now what? Now the old tabernacle and even the temples, which were based on this old covenant, are also disappearing. But the author decides to take the next couple of verses to walk through the old tabernacle and how it was set up. So what was the old tabernacle? What was the old temples? Well, the old temples were where the priests did their sacrifices. It was where Israel went to offer sacrifices to God as a covering. And it had several areas. It had the outer area, which is where all the priests did their daily duties. It was where most of the men could go and sacrifice. It was the limit of where people could go in. As you're walking through this, then you have this inner place. It was called the Holy of Holies, or the most holy place. This is where, as you see throughout the next several verses, he describes, well, there was the ark in here, there was the cherubim in here, there was some stuff in there. But that's not important. But what is important is what the holy place stood for. This was the physical representation of God's presence on earth. And guess what? This was also the most closed off part of the temple. One person got to go in there once a year, and it was the high priest. And guess what? He didn't just get to go in there because he was the high priest. He still had to make a sacrifice for himself before he could enter in there to offer up a blood sacrifice for all of Israel. So what's the point of walking through this? Why does he want to go through how this old temple and old tabernacles were set up? He says here, it was symbolic. This was a clear message that the holy place, and by extension, God's presence, was inaccessible. He says right in verse 8, the Holy Spirit is making clear that the way into the holy place had not yet appeared as long as the old tabernacle was standing. So what is he saying? This was intentional. It was very intentional that God's presence was basically behind a curtain, closed off from the people. But it was symbolic. It was for a time. It was meant to be temporary. He says that these sacrifices could only cover sins, not remove it. And he continues on in saying, in verse 10, they served only for matters of food and drink, various watching, external regulations imposed until new order. He's really hammering down how much less this was. In verse 9, he said that it could not perfect the conscience. These were only physical things. It was meant to be a covering. It was meant for physical food, physical drink. It was not meant to remove sin. It was not meant to make us right with God, make them right with God. And guess what? That's intentional. This is what every Jew was subject to before Jesus. It was an extra burden. It was physically exhausting, having to go there and physically offer a sacrifice every time you were not right with the law. But this is what they were under. And guess what? This is what they were trying to go back under to get away from the persecution they were facing for being Christians. This physical temple, physical laws, not meant to spiritually cleanse them, just cover them. That's what they wanted to go back to. And I love this right here. What does the beginning of verse 11 say? But Christ. It's always cool when you're reading the Bible and all these things happen, and then the author says, but God. And it's the same here. All these physical things were not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. But Christ. Christ came to fulfill the law. Why is that important? Because the law was failing. The covenant was failing. Was it failing because God wasn't perfect? No, it was failing because every single person under the covenant, under the law, was not perfect. Every single person continually broke the law, continually sinned, continually rebelled against God, until one person came, Jesus. But Christ, he came, he lived a perfect life, he fulfilled that covenant. And he was the only man who could. And then he died without sin. And now in Hebrews 9, verse 11, but Christ has come as high priest of the good things to come. And not only did he come, But we know from the Gospels, he died, he rose again, and then he picks it up in here. He passed through the greater and more perfect tent, not made with hands, that is not of this creation. He didn't go into the earthly temple to offer a sacrifice. He went straight to the heavenly temple. And it says here that he passed through the entire tent, and he entered into the most holy place in heaven. Again, the most holy place was somewhere only the high priest could enter. But here's where the author points out again where Jesus is different. And he entered once for all in the most holy place, not by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood. And so he himself secured eternal redemption. What's the point here? Well, throughout the entire Old Testament, throughout the entire time of the covenant and the law, one thing was required for a covering of sin, and that was a blood sacrifice. And what did they use? They used the bloods of animals. And guess what? All that could do was cover sin. It just covered it. It kept covering. At no point did they ever get removed. They were waiting for God to send something that could actually remove their sin. And then Jesus, but Christ, he came. And when he died and rose again, and he went into heaven, he walked through every part of the temple, right up into the most holy place. And he said, here's my sacrifice, once for all. Not the sacrifice of an animal, not the blood of an animal, but my blood, which, again, he lived a perfect life. He was never under condemnation for sin. That blood he put, not on the earthly imitation, but in the heavenly tabernacle. And again, in verse 14, he said, in 13 and 14, for if the blood of bulls and goats and bulls and the ashes of a young cow sprinkled on those who are defiled consecrated them and provided them with a ritual purity, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to worship the living God? Again, what was the problem of the old covenant? It could only cover, it couldn't purify. It could not purify the conscience. How much more did Jesus' blood, when it was offered, purify the conscience? And so, in 15, Christ is the mediator of this new covenant, so that those who are called may receive eternal inheritance he has promised. So before we go to the new covenant, we need to do a little bit of background on the old covenant so we understand what's so special here. Under the old covenant, every single sin, every single violation of the law, anything that made you ritually unclean, required a sacrifice. The old covenant was an agreement between God and Israel. This wasn't something where God said, you know, I'm going to throw all these things on you for no reason. You're going to have to do all this and all these things. What things? All these sacrifices, all these obedience. God didn't force this on the people of Israel. At Mount Sinai, God, through Moses, offered these things. And you know what the people of Israel said? That's a great idea. We love that. God said, are you sure? Can you obey all these things? Absolutely, we can obey all these commands. We can do it on our own. Are you really sure you can do it? Yep, we accept both the commands and the blessings you give. And because we're not worried about it, we accept all the curses when we don't obey. Because of course we're going to obey. Well, three guesses what happened. At every single opportunity they were given, they disobeyed. In fact, while they were at the mountain, they made an idol and they worshipped it. While they were there, God said, hey, go look at this land I'm giving you. Since you're going to obey me and go in there, here's the land I'm giving you. We're not going to obey you. We don't trust you. Even though you just did all these things for us, you just got us out of Israel, we personally witnessed all your miracles, we don't trust you. So much for obedience. But you know what? They accepted this covenant. And because they accepted it, they were placed under the burden, the curses, the things that happened when they didn't obey. Why is that important? Because in 15, when he's saying that they receive an eternal inheritance, since he died to set them free from the violations committed under the first covenant, they were constantly under the violations of the first covenant, constantly under the burden of it, because they could not, would not, and still will not obey it. That's what was special. This is why Jesus is offering a better covenant. Because this new covenant frees them from that burden. This new covenant frees them from that violation. Because Jesus carries the new covenant on himself, on his blood, not on the obedience of the people. And the author uses a really cool example that's still relevant today. So what example does he use? He uses the example of a will. A will is something that is made while a person is alive, but it doesn't actually have effect while that person is alive. When you say, this is what I want to happen when I die, I want this stuff to go here, I want my body to be placed here, I want this to be happening, you're signing that, you're writing that today. But you expect, and everyone else expects, that even though this is what you want to happen, it won't happen while you're still alive. In the same way, Jesus, God, offered the new covenant. He said, this is what I want to happen, this is what's going to happen, I will make it happen. But it's not taking effect yet, and we don't expect it, they didn't expect it, God didn't say it was going to take effect yet. And the funny thing is, and he points this out in verse 16, for where there is a will, the death of the one who made it must be proven. Just because a will is written, just because somebody died, it still doesn't take effect yet, because you got to prove that person died. Sometimes if somebody disappears and we assume they're dead, you still don't know, and they have to wait for a time for it to be proven by law that that person is dead and the will can now take effect. In the same way, when the covenant was written, the old covenant, when the law was written, something had to happen for that to take effect. Guess what that was? Sacrifice and blood. He explains again, going through these next couple of verses, for when Moses had spoken and given all these things, he took the blood of cows and he dipped it. And so the covenant was covered in blood. Every utensil in the temple, the tabernacle itself, that's when it happened. That's when it took effect. So what was the thing that Jesus did to make the new covenant take effect? Well, we already saw that. Jesus went into the heavenly tabernacle, put his blood, and said, here we go, I'm signing this. This is my seal, this is my sign. This is the new covenant. Why is that important? Because in verse 22, something we see a lot. I've heard this verse before, I'm sure, but here's where it is in the middle of this section about Jesus. In verse 22, indeed, according to the law, almost everything was purified with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. Without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. Without the shedding of blood, there was no seal. They were sealed to this covenant by blood. Jesus offered a new covenant, but he had to seal it. And he sealed it with his blood. And in verse 23, it was necessary for the sketches of things in heaven to be purified with sacrifice. And so if it was necessary for the ones on earth to be purified by animals, how much more necessary was it for the heavenly temple, the new covenant, to be purified by something much greater than animals? It was necessary for there to be blood, but it was also necessary for that blood to be better. And that's what Jesus is. He is a better sacrifice. His blood was a better seal. So the author starts finally coming back around. He keeps taking all these detours to explain the temple, explain the tabernacle and the old sacrifices, which they didn't need to be under anymore. What was his point? It was necessary. In verse 24, Christ did not enter a sanctuary made with hands. He keeps mentioning this. Not a sanctuary made with hands, not on earth, not an imitation. Maybe there's a reason for this mentioning. But into heaven itself. He appears now in God's presence for us. And here's the key in verse 25. He did not enter to offer himself again and again, the way the high priest enters a sanctuary year after year with blood that was not his own. For then he would have had to suffer again since the foundation of the world. But now he has appeared, here's the key phrase, once for all. So what made Jesus' sacrifice better? What made his blood better? Christ's sacrifice was once for all. Remember, the high priest had to go in there every year. He had to carefully cleanse his own, cover his own sin with a sacrifice. He had to enter humbly. He had to put the blood on. He had to ask God to cover the sins again, waiting for something new. But Christ appeared. He said, here is something new. Here is what you are waiting on. Here's what you have been waiting on. And here's my seal. Here's my proof that what I'm saying is going to happen. Here's the blood. And I'm not going to put it on your earthly imitation. I'm going to go directly to heaven, to the temple and tabernacle not made by human hands, but made by God. And I'm going to walk past every one of those sacrifices, every one of those rooms, and I'm going to go right into the Holy of Holies, right into God's presence in heaven. And I'm going to stamp my blood on there. And he's going to stamp it once for all. There is no longer a need for a high priest to go in there once a year and offer for a covering. There's not even a need for Jesus to go once a year and offer a covering. There's not a need for Jesus to die again for the sin. Because his blood was offered once for all, and his blood is offered permanently to remove sin, not just cover it. This is what they were waiting for. This is what they were not under anymore. They were no longer under the burden of a covenant that said, you got to keep covering your sin, you got to keep covering, you can't come to God because you're covered in sin. You can't come to God because your sin is just covered, it's not removed. No, Jesus came and offered a permanent once-for-all sacrifice for removal of sin. But then, at the interesting thing here is the final verse in 28, it says, so also, after Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. Well, hang on. Didn't he just keep saying the sins of all, the sins of all, the sins of all? Well, I'll give you a hint here. I'm not an expert in Greek. I'm not an expert in Hebrew. But I did get a little bit of help from Pastor. And as we were looking this up, this is an allusion to Isaiah 53. And in Isaiah 53, it says sins of the many. And when an author is trying to say sins of the many, he's pointing out a specific group of people. Which, again, that group of people is the Jews. So even here, what he's trying to do is make this once for all more important, more popped out almost. He's alluding to different parts of the Bible, the different things they were looking forward to, once for all, for the many. If you're interested more in that, we're welcome to talk about that in the second hour. But the whole point he's trying to do here is bring out that once for all. This was a one-time thing. This was meant to show, hey, why are you going back to something you have to keep doing when there's something better right in front of you? And here's a really cool thing here. This is, even though he's not trying to share the gospel, this is the gospel at its purest. What do I mean by that? Well, what does he show here? It's not God choosing specific people to be saved. He said once for all. It's not people having to jump through many loopholes and exploits in order to be saved. It's not people being punished because they refuse to believe. That's not why people are punished. And also, by the way, it's not Christ dying again and again and again and somebody nailing him to the cross every time you sin. What it is, it's one death, one time for all people. It's one offering. Once he went into that temple and offered his blood for all people for all time. But the gospel is also a choice. Accept the offering that he already put on there or reject it. Just because the offering is there does not mean that it has been accepted. And also, just because somebody doesn't accept the offering does not mean it was not put out there for them to accept. What also is special about the gospel? It's a permanent removal of all guilt and the condemnation of sin. Remember, what was the author trying to point out here specifically to the Jews? The old covenant did not perfect the conscience. You still had the guilt of sin. It was just covered. But Jesus and his blood didn't just remove the sin. He removed the guilt of sin. He perfected the conscience. And I love this end here. It's a future hope too. It's a future hope of Christ's return. He's going to appear a second time, not to bear sin, not to bring condemnation, but salvation. What salvation are we talking about here? We're talking about a hope of freedom from the weight and sin. Remember, even now, when we have Christ in our lives, when we have Christ inside of us, we have the ability not to sin. But just like the Israelites, when we're offered a choice, do we always choose not to sin? No. But when Christ returns one day, we have that hope. He will remove the burden of sin completely. There won't be any sin in the future someday. That's our hope. That's our salvation, what we're looking forward to. They had the new covenant, but they also have this hope. This is the pure gospel. So what is going on here? Why all these things? Why is the author digging so heavily into this? And does any of it apply to us? Yes. Because what point is the author trying to make? The point he was trying to make is, why would you go back to something else? Why are you Jews going back to this burden when Jesus is right in front of you? Well, guess what? We might not have an old covenant to go back to, but we certainly have things in our lives before Jesus. They chose to turn away from the freedom of Christ and the hope of the new covenant in order to go back under a burden. What can we do? We can choose to go back to our old sinful lives when things get tough for us. We want to sometimes not even, we don't say, I'm rejecting Jesus, but you know, this is getting tough. These people don't like Jesus, so I'm going to try to appear like I was before. I'm going to try to blend in with the crowd. And what's even funnier is, unlike the Jews, many of us aren't under threat for our lives. There are Christians in the world today who are. There are Christians who are under threat for their lives. But many of us aren't under threat of our lives, but we still do face persecution. No matter where you are, no matter who you are, you will face some sort of persecution for believing in Christ. You will have something be thrown against you because of your belief. And sometimes going back into your old ways doesn't look like rejecting Jesus. It looks like remaining silent. Just, I'm not going to stir the pot. These people don't like Jesus, so I'm just not going to say anything when they ask me what I believe. I'm going to sit here quietly and hope to pass through. What's the problem for this? Is that we're forgetting who Jesus is. We're forgetting what he did for us when we do that. We're saying that Jesus isn't enough for us at this moment. If you're not saying, Jesus did all this for me, Jesus isn't enough for you right then. And what is the warning passage? Remember, we've gone through some very harsh warning passages in Hebrews about turning away from Jesus. And where did it start? It started by drifting. The example of the beach. You're not swimming away, but when you're standing there and you're not going against the current, you're letting the current push you whether you realize it or not. When we're not standing for Jesus, we're letting ourselves drift away from him. And as the author keeps going through these warnings in Hebrews, we've seen them get harsher and harsher and harsher to where drifting turns into absolutely walking away to the point where it's impossible to return in this life. So even though this isn't a salvation warning, it's still a very serious warning about how we're to live and how far we can fall when we're not intentionally walking, remaining, as he says here, waiting hopefully for the day Jesus returns. So what is our responsibility then? First and most important responsibility is to remember who Jesus is and what he did for us. Jesus is our high priest. He's our perfect sacrifice. He's our intermediator. He is the one who said, your sins have been paid for. All you have to do is accept my offering. And yes, we're not under the law. We don't have to offer sacrifices every time for our sin. And guess what? We don't even have to be afraid when we come before the throne. Do you know why? Well, like we sang earlier, all because of Jesus. All because of Jesus, we're alive. It's all because his blood, his sacrifice, that we've been saved. It removed our sin. And guess what? It's all because of his service and authority that allows us to confidently approach God. It's not that we're that great and we're that amazing and we can go before God. It's that Jesus is, like we saw last week, sitting at the right hand of the throne. He is there, and we can go there in his blood to be confident approaching God. Which leads right into the second thing that we need to be responsible for. We need to make sure that we're not ashamed of who Jesus is, and we need to make sure we don't drift away. Again, following Jesus is not always easy. Even the author of Hebrews never claimed that following Jesus would guarantee an easy life or guarantee that everything's going to work out the way you want. But what he did say is that you can have a fulfilling life serving. And even though we don't have a new covenant like they do, we have so many other promises throughout the New Testament given to us as a church. So many things that we can hope for, we can look forward to. An eternity free from sin. And God's not above rewarding us for our service. He's not above saying, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Here are your crowns that you earned for your service." But guess what? You don't get those crowns if you didn't work, if you didn't serve. He doesn't say you'll lose your salvation. You'll be there in heaven. But how much better is it to walk into heaven and the first thing you hear is, "Well done, good and faithful servant," versus you walk into heaven with nothing to show for it and you hear, "You made it. You're here. You can skip the line for the rewards and go right in." I don't think any of us would want to be in that line. So that's the reward. That's what we have to look forward to. And that's also what we don't want to look forward to. And guess what? Serving Jesus requires perseverance. In case you guys forgot, we're going through the path this year, and Hebrews is about perseverance. It's about godliness. It's about being willing to choose to commit, a lifelong commitment. And why is that important? Perseverance is what stops us from drifting away. It's not that we choose to drift away. It's if we don't choose to persevere, we are going to drift away. You either are persevering or you're drifting away. And if we do want to hold fast, we need to do what it says in verse 28 and eagerly await him. The final thing, and I think one of the most important things that the author is warning about here, is to not destroy your testimony and destroy Jesus' image in front of others. What was happening here? The Jews were turning back to the synagogue, going back to their old friends, and their friends were like, "Guess Jesus wasn't enough for you. It looks like you're back." Same thing can happen with us. When we turn away from Jesus, even temporarily, we're telling everyone who's watching us, and make no mistake, there are people watching us, that Jesus was not enough. When we hide, we're telling everyone that our problems are bigger than Jesus. When we fall back into our old ways, we're telling everyone that the old ways were better than Jesus' ways. And when we allow ourselves to even just drift away, we're saying that Jesus wasn't enough to change us from our old ways. Every single thing that we do, everything we say, and everything we believe in this life does not just affect us, it affects everyone around us. We never know who's watching, who's listening, who's learning from us. So we have a responsibility to share Jesus with the world. And when we fall away, when we drift, when we walk away, it's not that you're not sharing Jesus, you're sharing a bad image of Jesus. So what does this warning mean? Is we need to be very careful that every single thing we do points people to Jesus, not away. That's really what Hebrews is about. That's really why the author hits so hard on Jesus is better. Jesus is better for you. Jesus is better for those around you. Are you going to choose to make sure that everyone sees that? Or are you going to be the reason somebody thinks that Jesus is not good enough? It sounds harsh, and it's meant to sound a little harsh, but the whole point is Jesus is better. We sang last week, "Your grace is enough." Whenever we come into these temptations and trials, his grace is enough. And I hope and I pray that every single one of you today, every single one of us, always remembers that. Our testimony matters. Our testimony can either point people to or away. And I pray that we remember who he is and what he did so that our testimony can point to that.